Today is the anniversary of 9/11. I hadn't thought about it too much until this morning, and I noticed that the president was on the television. I just saw a little snippet. And in speaking about this day and those that lost their lives back about 9 years ago, I believe it was, he said, "This is a day of remembrance." And the rest of his speech, I don't know, because I didn't listen to it. I was busy. But I got to thinking about that, and I got to thinking about the time that we're in right now. And I look at this table here, and I says, "In remembrance of me." And that's the table that the other church uses during the Passover season. Of course, I think their Passover season is not like ours, but nevertheless, they do take grape juice and the unleavened bread, I suppose, in some sort of remembrance of Christ. Whether it's absolutely correct, I doubt, but nevertheless, it's in remembrance. So I thought about the time of the season that we're in. And I thought about the Old Testament and the Israelites of old, who were primarily an agricultural society. And I could think back to the time before they were making their pilgrimage up to Jerusalem to keep this Latter-day feast in the third season. That is the fall festival that we've entered into with the day that we observed this past Thursday, the Feast of Trumpets, which begins the fall holy day season. And I got to thinking about all the things that they were doing in preparation for going up to Jerusalem. You know, they were very busy, and I don't know about you folks, but Claire and I have been very busy, and making last-minute things, and had to do some work on the truck, put a water pump on it, and I've got to make sure it's ready to go. I changed the oil in it, and last-minute preparations and things that you make before you journey up to the feast site to keep the Feast of Tabernacles. And I thought about those folk that had the agricultural society, and I thought how they were tied to the land. And the land was extremely important to them. And I dare say that we in this time lose a lot of the connection that we should have to the land and to how it provides sustenance for us. For example, we think that we can just go to Walmart and the food's going to be there, we are not connected to the land directly like they were. And so we don't really have to depend upon the rains. Now, somebody else does, but we don't take that direct connection, do we? Because when I go to Walmart, I just think of the fact that I hope I've got enough money in my checking account to pay for this food. And I think all the time when I see my friends there, if we could stay away from Walmart, we'd save a lot of money. But yet we wouldn't be able to eat, would we? Because we don't raise our crops. But the Israelites of old did. They raised their flocks and their herds. They raised their beef, their cattle. They raised the lambs and the rams and the boar, and all the things that go along with the agricultural society. So, they were in touch and tune with the land. And I thought about this time being a time of remembrance and reflecting back upon what they had done through the course of the year. Because probably to them it seemed like it just seems like not long ago we were keeping the Feast of Unleavened Bread in the Passover season. It just seems like the older I get, the quicker these years go by. I don't know about you, Mr. Payne, but the older I get, it just seems like, gosh, it's like, when I was a young person, it just seemed like they just drug on and drug on. It was forever before I got to be 16. But this young lady just observed a birthday here, I think last Sunday. She was 16. And then it seemed like it would take forever before I got 21. And then when I got 21, it seemed like just I turned around and I was in my 30s. And now in my 60s, so, time goes by. But I thought about, this is a time or a day or a season of reflection and remembrance as they reflected back upon the crops and how they had labored to put the seeds into the ground. Now, let's remind ourselves of this. When they put that seed in the ground, they had to depend on something to bring it up, didn't they? They had to depend on a good fertile soil. They had to depend upon the sun that would heat the soil enough for the seeds to germinate. They had to depend upon the rain. So they directly made a tie between the land and God giving them the increase. Because if they didn't receive the rains, the crops would, the seeds wouldn't germinate, and they had very sparse crops. So they directly tied the land to God and the blessings that came from the sun that warmed the earth, and also the land itself that was fertile, and the seeds would grow up, and they would actually produce crops. And I thought about all the things that were involved in the preparation of the land, the planting of the seed, and the harvest of the crops. If you go back to the book of Leviticus, the 23rd chapter, I just want to review just some verses here. It lists all these festivals of God, all the Sabbaths that he said are my holy convocations. It mentions the Sabbath day, verse 3 of chapter 23 of the book of Leviticus. And these are all his holy convocations. They're not the Jews, they're not the Hebrews. They're his holy convocations that he invited the Hebrew people to. Just like he's inviting us now to come up and keep the Feast of Tabernacles with him, you know, in Harrison, Arkansas, or wherever you're going. You know, you come up and you keep the feast with me, and when you do, you're in what? You're in my presence. And when you keep these feast days, when you honor God by being in his presence, then he also will honor you. So these were days of remembrance and reflection and honoring of God. And he says, you keep the Sabbath, verse 3, but verse 4 says, these are the feasts of the Lord, even holy convocations, which you shall proclaim or announce in their seasons. And it goes on to talk about the Passover and the feast of first fruits, or the feast of the day of Pentecost, as it mentions in the New Testament. Also talks about the feast of trumpets that we had just concluded. But I want to go now to verse 33, where God spoke to Moses, saying, speak unto the children of Israel, saying, the 15th day of the seventh month shall be a feast of tabernacles for 7 days unto the Lord. On the first day shall be a holy convocation. That's where we come together and we have a service. Actually, we're doing it 8 days, aren't we? You realize that wasn't absolutely commanded. But we're doing something that, you know, even goes beyond what God is asking. But he says, in the first day shall be a holy convocation here. And it says, you shall do no servile work. Verse 36, 7 days you shall offer an offering made by fire unto the Lord. Where did the offering come from? Well, it came from the fruits of your labor. You know, you planted the seeds in the ground, and you raised your cattle and your herds, and God watered the fields, and the cattle could graze, the sheep could graze. So therefore, it was all tied to God. It was all tied to the land he gave us, gave our forefathers. So there was this real direct connection between the God and the increase of the land that he had given them. So they were very in tune with where their blessings came from, weren't they? So you would think that they would never lose sight of that, would you? Well, that's what you would think. But I think it's much tougher for us today because we don't have that direct connection. We go to the supermarkets, we go to the grocery stores, and we find everything we want there in abundance. Now, depending on the fact whether we have enough money to buy it or not, you know, it's there for us, for the taking. And it seems never to be a shortage, does there? Because God has blessed our grounds. But again, the direct tie between the land and us is not as pertinent or as close to us as it was the Israelites of old. But he says here, I want you to bring an offering from all the things that I've blessed you with, from the fields and from the herds and from the flocks of sheep and so forth. Again, it's a holy convocation, verse 36. You shall offer this offering made by fire unto the Lord. It is a solemn assembly, and you shall do no servile work therein. These are the feasts of the Lord, which you shall proclaim to be holy convocations, to offer an offering made by fire unto the Lord, a burnt offering, a meat offering, a sacrifice, a drink offering, everything upon this day, everything in its succession, everything in its order. Verse 38, besides the Sabbaths of the Lord, that's the weekly Sabbath, and besides your gifts, and besides all your vows, and besides all your freewill offerings, which you give unto the Lord. Continues by saying, also in the 15th day of the seventh month, when you have gathered in the fruit of your land, and again, it's a reflection back to that time before you came up to Jerusalem. You know, you had your children involved, you had your wives and the daughters involved in their things, getting things ready to go to the feast. You know, you had to select out the best of the herds, you selected out the best of the crops, because the offerings that you were going to offer were from the best of the fruit of the land. So the good things, the best, were brought up before God to give an offering at the Feast of Tabernacles. So you could reflect back upon how God had brought you from the beginning of the year in the barley harvest during the days of unleavened bread, and how you had gathered that stuff in and had it helped to sustain you to the course of the summer until you came to the Feast of Pentecost, and maybe you brought in some wheat or some other crop, and that would sustain you over into the latter part of the year. All these things tied to the land, all these things tied to the blessings of God from the rains, from the sun, and from the good weather. And you had to depend upon God to bring you the rain at due season. You had to depend upon the sun to be right. And all these things were God-given. and directly tied to your blessing. So therefore, it was required that you gather up some of this, the fruit of the land. You shall keep a feast unto the Lord 7 days, and on the first day shall be a Sabbath, and on the eighth day also a Sabbath, which would be a different one. It talks about making branches from palm trees and boughs of trees and rocks. Did you ever wonder where these brush arbors came from? The idea of the brush arbor and the things that went on in Protestant churches back through the history of our nation here? I'm sure it probably came from this type here where it talks about these boughs of thick trees and willows of the brook. And you shall rejoice before the Lord 7 days. In other words, it was a temporary dwelling place, a hut or a booth made out of these different things that God had provided people of the land of Israel. So everything was provided for you, even a dwelling place. And he says, verse 42, you shall dwell in booths 7 days. All that are Israelites born shall dwell in booths or temporary huts or dwelling places. So now, you know, I'm thankful that we don't have to build these huts, because we know that it can extend to a place that you temporarily set your hat in or your coat and you lay down at night and sleep. So but you have to prepare all these things. You have to work, save your tithes, your money. That is the third tithe or the second tithe, whatever. And save your money and carry it up to the feast for you so that you can, purchase a temporary dwelling place for 8 days. In case of my wife and I, it'll be 10 days. But 8 days. So you have to prepare this. You have to be, working throughout the year towards the time that you go to the Feast of Tabernacles and reflecting back upon the whole year where you have been blessed, you have set aside these things so that you could, go up and keep this feast before the Lord your God. So you're all thinking about the blessings you had all during the year. You know, you came from the spring festival to the summer festival to the end of the year and the gathering of all the crops at the end of the year that were not only going to sustain you during the Feast of Tabernacles, but were going to sustain you through the dead part of the season when there was no crops growing. And then you take in the sabbatical year when you didn't plant anything and you were blessed twice as much in the sixth year. So why wouldn't someone reflect back upon what they had been given all through that year and how God had blessed them and had been merciful and gracious to them, giving them a land flowing with milk and honey, opportunity, and the wealth and bounty of the fields? And this is what they were to do. They were to take this wealth of theirs, bring it up and offer offerings to the priest and the Levites and for their families to eat. So it was time to reflect back, to remember the blessings that God had given you all through the year, and also the blessings that were going to carry you over to the new spring festival when the new renewing of crops would come. But just think about that sixth year. You had to trust God that He was going to bring you enough in that year to carry you forward 2 years. Now, you could gather from the whatever came up from the field by itself, but you couldn't plant. You couldn't, go in and harvest. You could just gather from the grapes or whatever was there during the course of the year, but you just didn't harvest. You didn't plant. You didn't grow. You trusted God to bring forth what He said He would do and honor you because you believed Him. So here we are, we're at the Feast of Booths, or temporary dwelling places. In verse 43, that your generation may know that I made the children of Israel to dwell in booths when I brought them out of the land, going back in reflection, I brought them out of the land of Egypt, out of slavery. I am the Lord your God. He's trying to instill them also that once you do what I ask you to do, once you go over to the land of promise, you will not have to be a slave any longer to anyone. But you will serve me. And my servitude is light. I'm not going to ask you to give up your firstborn like Egypt had to do. I'll just ask you to give part of your crops and your herds. It will be for a good purpose for those that are ministering in the synagogues and in the temple during the course of the year, and for their families that they may have something, because you realize that the Levites had no inheritance. They had no land. They had no direct connection to the land other than what the Israelites gave them. It's kind of like my working where I did. I had no direct connection to the land. I worked and did what they asked me to do, and they gave me a wage, and I in turn bought something that somebody else grew. So there was no direct connection for me to the land. It was an indirect connection. But these had direct connections here for these Israelites of old. And Moses declared to the children of Israel the feast of the Lord. And also it was to reflect back upon their deliverance, where they had came from and where they were going. And Exodus, the 23rd chapter. Exodus 23. Again, the president said, is it a time of remembrance? I say, yes, it is. For us, we're remembering something else. Exodus 23, I'd like to begin in verse 20. In laws relating to conquest, he says, behold, I send an angel before you to keep you in the way and to bring you into a place which I have prepared. You know, I've prepared this land for you. He not only prepared the land, but they went into places where crops were planted. There were vineyards. There were wells dug. There were cities built. And by the way, they didn't go out of Egypt empty-handed either, did they? But they spoiled the Egyptians, didn't they? A place ready prepared. It reminds me of the New Testament where God says that I have a place prepared for you in the heavens. He said, I'm in the heavens preparing a place for you, and I will dwell with you. Here, verse 21, it says, beware of him, that is this angel, and obey his voice, provoke him not. For he will not pardon your transgressions, for my name is in him. But if you shall indeed obey his voice and do all that I speak, then will I be an enemy unto your enemies and an adversary unto your adversaries. So it's a time to remember also that, you know, what good was the land if you couldn't keep it? What good was to come into a city built if you couldn't keep it? You know, I've often used my brother and I for an illustration of what, you know, what difference there is in between my mind thought and his. And he likes toys, you know, boats and travel trailers and things of that nature. And I'm not against them. I like them too. But I don't want to buy something that I can't use or won't use or have to sell because I need the money later. I'm just not into that. I've not bought a big expensive home for the course of mine and Claire's marriage because I thought, well, you know, in a latter time maybe we might do something like that, but I want to be comfortable. I don't want to be in debt. I don't want to be a slave to my toys. I don't want to be a slave to my home. You know, I don't want to be in a position where, you know, if I lost my job tomorrow that I couldn't survive a while after I lost it. You know, I went to a lawyer one time and we're trying to sell my son's mobile home. And we're having some difficulty with the credit union. You know, I can't remember all the particulars about it, but I had to go to a lawyer to deal with it. And he was talking about, you know, the average American person had a mortgage, had a car or two they were paying for, and kids in college, and they were, you know, in debt up to the hilt. And I got to think about that, and I said, yeah, you're exactly right. I said, that's the reason I don't have those things. I don't want to be in debt. I don't want to be a slave to anyone, to anything. But I want to serve the God that we're talking about here that says that if you obey this voice, even your adversaries will leave you alone. He continues by saying, verse 23, for my angel shall go before you and bring you unto the Amorites and the Hittites and all their land. I will cut them off. Verse 24, you shall not bow down to their gods. Verse 25, you shall serve the Lord your God, and he shall bless your bread, he shall bless your water, and I will take sickness from the midst of you. You know, this nation of ours, we're living longer, but we're having to do it by, you know, all sorts of means that weren't intended. You know, all kinds of surgeries, all kinds of medications, all kinds of fixes that are, you know, supposed to fix us, but the side effects are just as bad or worse sometimes than the cure. But, you know, we're living longer. I'm not sure how successful that is, but we are living longer. He says, I will take this sickness from you. Verse 26, there shall none of you cast their young, nor be barren in your land. The number of your days I will fulfill. I will send my fear before you and will destroy all the people to whom you shall come. And I will make all your enemies turn their backs unto you. Talks about verse 29, I'm not going to drive them out in just 1 year. Okay? But as you increase, as your families grow, as you begin to expand out to the countryside, then I will take care of those people for you. Because if I drove them all out in 1 year, then the land would be filled with beasts that would come in to attack you. So he had this plan worked out. And all the Israelites had to do is remember and honor him with their presence at his feast, beginning with the weekly Sabbath and the yearly Sabbath as the year went by. He said, I will destroy them before you. And it says, verse 30, by little and little I will drive them out from before you until you be increased and inherit the land. In other words, when they grew and it was time to expand, he would take care of their enemies. Open to Deuteronomy, the 7th chapter. Deuteronomy 7. A time to remember. Deuteronomy 7. Beginning verse 11, he says, thou shalt therefore keep the commandments and the statutes and the judgments which I command you this day to do them. Wherefore it shall come to pass, if you hearken to these judgments and keep and do them, that the Lord your God shall keep unto you the covenant and the mercy which he sware unto your fathers. Remember what he sware to Abraham, you know, you will be blessed. Your seed will increase as the numbers of the stars of heaven, the sands of the sea, and all the earth will be blessed in you. And he says, verse 13, I will love you and bless you and multiply you. He will also bless the fruit of your womb, the fruit of your land, your corn, your wine, your oil, the increase of your kine, and the flocks of your sheep, in the land which he sware unto the fathers to give. You shall be blessed above all people. There shall not be a male or a female barren among you or among your cattle. And in other places, he talks about the fact that, you know, you will lend to other people. You'll be that blessed. You know, you'll lend to other people. You shall not borrow. But then he goes on and talks about the downside of that is if you do not listen, then you will be borrowing from people such as we do today. We borrow from the Chinese today. It used to be the Japanese, now it's the Chinese. And I couldn't tell you how much debt we owe to them. But I do know that, I don't see how we'll ever pay it back. If God's will be done, it will be paid back. If not, we'll just go further and further in debt until the dollar is just worth nothing. And all of this because we have lost sight of who God is. We have failed to remember. Remember the Sabbath days to keep it holy. Not a Sabbath, but the Sabbath. You know, I had a guy at work one time said, well, you know, I think any day could be the Sabbath or maybe every day or whatever. I can't remember exact words, but I said, well, you know, it doesn't say remember a Sabbath. It says remember the Sabbath. And that's the Sabbath of the Bible and the Scriptures that we're all observing today. So he says here, I'm going to bless you. In verse 14, you shall be blessed above all the people. None of your male or female shall be barren among you or among a cattle. And the Lord will take away all your sicknesses and none of the evil diseases of Egypt, which you knowest upon thee, but will lay them upon all them that hate you. So he's going to, remember this now, he's going to give them the increase. He's going to provide their sustenance. He's going to give them protection. He's going to go before them in battle. He's going to annihilate their enemies. And he's going to give them this land in increments until they're able to sustain it without the wild beast coming into it. So God had a plan. God had a plan for his people. From the very moment, even before he created man upon this earth, he had a plan. And it's being implemented here. Talks about verse 16, you shall not pity those people which I drive out before you. And if, verse 17, if you shall say in your heart, these nations are more than I, how can I dispossess them? Thou shalt not be afraid of them, but shall well remember what the Lord your God did unto Pharaoh and to all of Egypt. So the time of the Sabbaths, and especially these latter Sabbaths, are a time to reflect back upon the past, as well as looking toward the future. For the Feast of Tabernacles pictures a time of deliverance and also a latter time of deliverance from where we're at now. I don't know about you folk. I love life. I love living. I love people. I love family. But I don't like turmoil. I don't like anguish. I don't like dying. I don't like infirmities. I don't like diseases. I don't like it now that I can't lift over 10 pounds. I find myself, you know, you don't really think about it and realize it, but I find myself every day needing to do something that I'm supposed to not do. And I'm tempted to do it anyway. But I do trust the doctors enough to know that they have seen my condition enough to know that I better not. I want to badly. I mean, I tell you, I just cannot hardly stand it because I can't go out and do things that I used to do. When I was in my prime and good health, and I thought that it would last forever. I'm telling you, people, good health does not last forever. There are very few people that are blessed to the time of their death like my aunt was. Where I don't even really know if she took any medication. I suppose she did, but I know during the course of most of her life, she took very little medication. She was very, self-sufficient after her husband died, up until the point, she got to be bedfast. But, I mean, she was well up into her 90s before she got to the point where I am. She was a very independent lady, very strong, and had a lot of self-will. So I don't like those things. I don't like temporary. I've never liked temporary. One of the most frustrating things to me is that things don't remain the same. I know there's a good side of that because I know that this present age that we live in now, where we find ourselves in difficulty, we find ourselves in tribulation, we find ourselves in turmoil inside our families and outside our families, in our workplaces, in our society, I know that's going to come to an end. So that part of temporary I like. And I know there's lessons to be learned from losing people and people dying. I know all about those lessons. And I know they're not lost for good. God has showed that to us, so He's been gracious to us. But I still don't like it. When I care for someone, I don't want to lose them. I just don't. I don't want to give them up. So that helps me to remember who they were and all the good memories. And it also helps me to know that in the millennium, that those who are dead in Christ, I shall see again. And what a reunion that will be. And I also know in the great white throne judgment period, when my mother and my father come up, and other relatives that have passed on before me, that too will be a great reunion. And a time to gather people in to Christ. So I know about all these things, but I just don't like giving up. I don't like that part about this life. And I know it's going to cease and come to an end. So that holds me over until the time that it does. Moving on now over to chapter 8, the book of Deuteronomy. Let's go to chapter 6 because there's something here that he asks us to remember. In chapter 6, the book of Deuteronomy, I want to go to verse 1. Deuteronomy 6, verse 1. Again, talking about the commandments and things in verse 1. And verse 2, he says, he said, when I give you this land to possess, I want you to remember these statutes and these commandments. Verse 2, that you might fear the Lord, that you might respect Him. And part of those commandments were to come up and keep the high feasts or high days, festivals, if you will. That you might learn to fear the Lord your God, to keep all His statutes and His commandments, which I command you. You and your son and your son's son, and all the days of your life, that their days may be prolonged. Hear therefore, O Israel, and observe to do it, that it may be well with you, and that you may increase mightily, as the Lord God of your fathers has promised you, in the land that flows with milk and honey. Now, I don't know about you, but I know of no other land that has ever flowed with milk and honey like this land. You know, when God told Abraham, you will bless all the nations of the earth, I can look back and see physically where we have blessed other nations, where we have sent grain or wheat or barley or whatever, or money to other nations, many of them, more than any other. We have been blessed so much that we could send more than any other nation on the face of this earth. God keeping His promise to our forefather, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, He's faithful. He kept that promise. And we have blessed other people. Also, this nation has been used, as well as other nations, to bless the people of this world spiritually. I know that, without a doubt. That I know the oracles were left unto the Jewish people. And from them came some of the laws and the things that we need to know. They have kept them. They have kept them intact. And this book is a book that was kept intact for us to be blessed with and to bless others with. So I know about the blessings. I know about the land flowing with milk and honey. But he says, I want you to remember this. When you come into that land, and I give you all these things that I promised, and I have been faithful to you, I want you to remember one thing. Well, there's a lot of things he wants you to remember. Number one, be faithful to him, but also he wants us to remember, let's see, look in verse 10. He says, and it shall be when you, Lord your God, has brought you into this land flowing with milk and honey, which he sware to his fathers, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, to give you great and goodly cities, which you did not build. Your hands didn't implement these cities, these towns, these dwelling places. They're there for you. I'm going to drive the people out that built them, and you're going to take advantage of it. I mean, hello? I mean, I would love for somebody to build me a new home. And me just move into it without the monthly notes? Would anybody here turn one of those down? You know, I wouldn't. I'll be honest with you. Somebody build me a new home and say, all you got to do is move into it? I'd be packing up tomorrow. Or actually, somebody else would be lifting the loads for me. I wouldn't be packing up. Maybe light boxes, but I'd be ready to move. So God gave this land flowing with milk and honey, these cities. And he said, verse 11, houses full of all the good things, which you filled not. Wells that were dug, which you did not dig. Vineyards and olive trees, which you did not plant. When you shall have eaten and been full, then beware lest you forget the Lord, which brought you forth out of the land of Egypt from the house of slavery. You shall fear the Lord, you shall respect him, you shall honor him, your God, and serve him, and shall swear by his name. Talks about having no other gods before him. And let's see. I think I want to go from here over to chapter 8. Chapter 8. And I'll begin in verse 1 there. Chapter 1, verse 8. Here he's talking about all the commandments again. Verse 1, how he led them through the wilderness for 40 years and humbled them. And verse 3, I humbled you and allowed you to hunger. And to let you know that man does not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of the Lord does man live. In other words, there's going to be something else that comes from me that will not only take you and supplant you and increase you physically, but spiritually, you'll know things that will bring to you eternal life. And continuing, he says, verse 5, you shall consider in your heart that as a man chastens his son, so the Lord chastens you also. But you shall keep these commandments. And it says, verse 8, I'll give you this land. Let's go to verse 7. A land of brooks of water, fountains, depths that spring out of the valleys and out of the hills. I'll never forget the time that we went up to Willow Springs, Missouri. On the way up there, we went just south of the border of Missouri and Arkansas. I believe it's called the Spring River. And the river itself comes from millions of gallons that just, and it's very deep. The spring is very deep. So by the time it gets up to the top of the water there that forms this river, you can barely see the water boiling up. But it's like millions of gallons of water an hour that just comes out of the rock. Kind of reminds you of where Moses struck the rock and the water flowed out of it. And it forms a huge river. And they've got all these places where you can go and fish on this river and catch trout. And you know, I mean, it's just a huge, and they're all over the Ozark Mountains, these huge rivers that come out of the rocks. And no telling where these waters came from in the beginning of them. It might have been on the West Coast somewhere. Who knows? I don't think they really know where the origins of these waters are, that are from the depth. And I've heard about artesian wells all my life in this part of the country where it just comes up out of the ground. Nobody's drilled. But water just comes up and it doesn't stop flowing. 365 days a year, this water is flowing and nobody's dug a well. God has blessed the depths of this nation beyond anything that I've ever seen. And he's done it all for us. But he says, I'll give you all this. Verse 8, a land of wheat and barley and vines, fig trees, pomegranates, olive oil, honey. And you shall not lack anything. And bread without scarceness, verse 9, it talks about. And you'll dig things out of the earth, it talks about in verse 9. Let's see. I think I'll stop right there. Somewhere I missed the scripture where it talks about, once I give you all of this, don't forget where your wealth came from. Don't forget that it's through me that you get your increase. Whether you plant it in the ground, whether you put it out in the fields, whether it be a herd, I have to water your ground. I have to water your crops. I have to give you the sunshine. I have to give you the pleasant weather. I have to give you the fertile soil. I have to provide for you all these things. You will be blessed by the fruit of your hands. The labor of your hands will come to you. But never forget that it's I that gives you power to get well. With that in mind, let's go over to Hebrews, the 12th chapter, Hebrews 12. A time to remember. At the end of the year, more than any other, it's a time to remember all the things that God has done for us that got us to this point. I can tell you that I don't know how many times God has saved me and or my family through my years to bring me to this point in my life. And I dare say that you can't tell me all the times that God has stepped in for you. The grace of God and His hand on you and your lives and brought you together with your spouse or your family and blessed you in ways that you never knew. I can tell you one particular time when I knew that I was close to death and I was headed to the Feast of Tabernacles over Land Between the Lakes. I experienced something that I'd never experienced before in my life, something called hydroplaning. And my wife and I both were convinced that we were about to die. We just had that conclusion came to our mind. No, I didn't see my life flash before my eyes. All I saw was grass flying and mud, and I saw the oncoming traffic as the truck went down the median, or excuse me, down the I guess it maybe is the median, is it? In between the two highways, the median. And, I was doing 360s, and everything I was doing to try to correct that truck was just not, it's to no avail. I couldn't control it, no matter what I did. I know you're supposed to, if your truck's sliding this way, you're supposed to turn your steering wheel that way. Well, so what? In that particular time, it just did no good at all. And Claire and I both, our daughter and her husband were asleep. I say they were. They woke up, her daughter thought we were in the tornado. I can laugh about it now, but right then, it was a moment that almost had to clean soil pants, if you know what I'm drifting at here. But we were both and concluded in our mind that we were going to die. And what I was afraid of is that we were going to take other people out with us. And by a mistake that I made, it was my mistake, and I had my cruise control on, I passed a big truck. And I don't know if you know about NASCAR and drafting and losing when the air coming from the vehicle behind you will kind of lift up your... Well, Claire and I, just as soon as we got past that 18-wheel truck, we felt that truck just lift up. I mean, it was just, there's no, you just felt it. It just lifted up. And I thought, uh-oh. And then I made another mistake. I hit the brakes too hard. And when I did that, there goes the truck, spinning in front of an 18-wheel tractor trailer. And to this day, I don't know where that tractor trailer went. I never saw it again. I was too busy trying to fight the steering wheel. But I know that God delivered my wife and I and our family. I know it hasn't been too long ago that my dear friend Neil Saul was close to being pinned by a tractor and we would have missed his company. But thanks be to God, He delivered him from that sure death. How many times can we say, God, has brought us from the drink of death. We don't know. We really don't know. We don't know how many times our God are in angels, but I do know that one time. I do know in my heart of hearts. I know beyond a shadow of a doubt that God placed His hand on that truck. When I tried to do everything, and it's just like He's trying to tell us in this time of the year, you can do all you want to do and everything you're supposed to do. But in doing so, don't forget it's me. It's not about me. That is me personally, or you personally. But it's about me, your God, your creator, your provider, your sustainer, your corrector. Because we read in the book of Deuteronomy where He says, I correct my children. I chastise my children. In the book of Hebrews, it tells us about, I will chastise you for your benefit. All of it is about your benefit. But don't forget the benefactor. I mean, the one that gives you the benefits. Don't forget Him. It's just that simple. And here in the book of Hebrews, the 12th chapter, beginning verse 4, He said, you've not resisted unto blood striving against sin, and you have forgotten the exhortation speaks unto you as unto the children. My son, do not despise you the chastening of the Lord, nor faint when you are rebuked of Him. For whom the Lord loves, He chastens and scourges every son whom He receives. If you endure chastening, God deals with you as with the sons. For what son is he whom the father chastens not? But if you without chastisement, wherefore all are partakers, then you are bastards and not sons. In other words, you're illegitimate children if you do not have chastisement. You know how God loves you? He chastises you. He corrects you. And children, it's hard for us to understand when we're small or young or 16 or whatever age. But sometimes our parents do things that we don't like, but it's for our own benefit. And we don't understand it at the time. We don't realize it, but it's for our benefit. Because they have been there and done that. And they know what, you know, this example of yours is going to lead to. So they'll rather you not do it, and they'll forbid you to do it. And if you do it, then they're going to chastise you. You know, if they allow you to borrow the car and you go out and you get it with a bunch of friends and you're doing things that you're not supposed to in that car, you're staying out late and you're supposed to, or you're imbibing of the alcoholic beverages and things like that, well, you know, I guess you can understand that they're going to refrain you from using the car again. Or they should, if they love you. So, therefore, God says, I'll do the same thing. But He says, I'll do it for your profit, verse 10. And He talks about no chastening at the present seems to be joyous, but grievous. Nevertheless, afterward, it yields the peaceful fruit of righteousness unto them which are exercised thereby. So we have to realize God is going to sustain us. He's going to provide for us. He's going to protect us. In Exodus, the 23rd chapter, back in the Old Testament, Exodus 23, I'm going to go to verse 15. I've already taken us there. Let's go, Exodus 34. Exodus 34 and beginning verse 21. 6 days you shall work, but on the seventh day you shall rest. In earing time and in harvest shall you rest. That's a difficult thing for a farmer to do. Because if it's pretty weather on the Sabbath and you've had a week where it's been lousy, your natural tendencies want to go into that crop and do the things that are necessary to get the crop in. If it's an earing time, you want to plant. If it's a pretty day, you want to plant. But if it's a Sabbath day, don't be tempted. He says, even in earing time or in planting time, seeding time, do not work, but rest. In verse 22, and you shall observe the feast of weeks, the first fruits of the harvest, and the feast of ingathering at the year's end. Three times shall all your man children appear before the Lord God, the God of Israel. For I will cast out the nation before you, and enlarge your borders, and neither shall any man desire your land. Wait a minute. He's not only going to protect you, but He's going to protect the land that you have. The land that ties you to Him. That ties your blessings to Him. The land that He's showered with showers, the land that He's visited with the sunshine, the land that He's made fertile, He's going to protect it when you're gone to keep His and honor Him at His feast. You can well imagine that the Israelites were surrounded by their enemies. And He knew what they were going to be thinking. They're going to be thinking that, wait a minute, when we go up and honor you at the Feast of Tabernacles or the other feast during the year, somebody will desire our land. Oh, you suppose? But God even protected them and their land from people who would take it. In Deuteronomy 11, in verse 10, this land that he gave me, he says, "For the land whither you go in to possess it, it is not the land of Egypt from whence you came out, where you sowed your seed and watered it with your foot as a garden of herbs. But the land whither you go in to possess it, it is a land of hills and valleys, and drinketh water of the rain of heaven. A land which the Lord your God cares for. The eyes of the Lord your God are always upon it, from the beginning of the year even unto the end of the year." Talks about verse 14, "I'll give it rain in due season," and latter in the beginning part of the seasons. And you're gathering your corn, your wine, your increase. When I think back about this day in 2001, and what happened to our people in Pittsburgh, in the Pentagon, in the two towers, I think about God lifting his hand for a moment in time and allowing those, terrorists to come in and hit those places and kill all of those people. I think about the times that we have dishonored him over the course of our existence here in this nation. It's not the nation that we once knew. It's not the nation that was founded upon God, the one true God. It's not a nation where the ministries of this world even recognize or understand that the principles and guidance and commandments of God are still to be adhered to. But they are reforming the commandments and perverting the commandments to fit the age and time of our culture today. Commandments of God have been altered to fit the culture. And in doing so, are directly dishonoring the Creator. For he laid these principles down to be kept forever throughout the generations of our forefathers as well as us. They were never to be done away with. We're told in the book of Ecclesiastes that we're supposed to take in the fruit of our labors, our hands, because that's the gift of God. Physically speaking, that is true. But in the book of John, the sixth chapter, he tells us that we're supposed to labor for better things, more lasting things. John, the sixth chapter. We normally read these during the days of unleavened bread, but I thought them appropriate today in remembering our provider, our sustainer, our protector, and our creator. John 6, verse 26, Christ said, "Truly I say unto you, you seek me not because to see the miracles, but because you did eat the loaves and were filled." You remember there was big throngs that would follow him up until a point in time. He says, "Labor not for the meat which perishes, but for that meat which endures unto everlasting life, which the Son of Man shall give unto you, for him has the Father sealed." And he goes on to say that, verse 35, "I am the bread of life. And he that comes to me shall never hunger, and he that believes on me shall never thirst. But I said unto you that you also have seen me and believe not. All that the Father has given me shall come to me, and him that comes to me will I no wise cast out." We're a part of a work that preaches deliverance from temporary things, temporary dwelling places, temporary lands, because this earth that we're dwelling on right now that we cherish is going to burn up. But God had a plan for that. When he burns up everything in this earth and everything that's defiled it, he'll come down with a new heaven and a new earth and tabernacle with men. His son will have been here for over 1,000 years, dwelling with men, shaping and forming a government that he has set up and authorized. The good news will have been preached for over 1,000 years, and all rule and authority will be put down. And that's the Father's business that Christ is about. And we remember that business every year, that we keep the Sabbath and the Feast of Tabernacles, the last great day, the Day of Atonement,
Feast of Trumpets, Pentecost, the days of unleavened bread and the Passover. They all picture the plan of salvation for mankind. That's our Father's business.
And that's what we are to labor in. In Philippians, the fourth chapter, Philippians 4, labor for the better things that will not pass away. Philippians 4, speaking here of those that labored with him, he said, therefore, my brethren, verse 1, dearly beloved and longed for, my joy and crown, so stand fast in the Lord, my dearly beloved. I beseech you, Dias, and beseech Syntyche, that they be of the same mind in the Lord. And I also entreat you also, true yoke fellow, help those women which labored with me in the gospel, with Clement also, and with others of my fellow laborers whose names are written in the book of life. Verse 6, he says, be careful for nothing, but always, with prayer and supplication and thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God. And the peace of God, which passes all understanding, shall keep your hearts and minds through Christ Jesus. And for our last selection, let's go to 1 Thessalonians. 1 Thessalonians. Oops, going the wrong direction. 1 Thessalonians, the fifth chapter, beginning verse 12. And we beseech you, brethren, to know them which labor among you and are over you in the Lord and admonish you, and to esteem them very highly in love for their work's sake, and to be at peace among yourselves. In verse 15, see that none render evil for evil unto any man, but ever follow that which is good, both among yourselves and to all men. One of the things that God teaches us, he reigns on the just and unjust just alike. He gives all people an opportunity and space to repent, to accept him. And those that are not in this life and age have another time coming, not another chance, but a beginning, which will come in the millennial reign of Jesus Christ in the great white throne judgment period. But in the meantime, he says in verse 16, rejoice evermore, pray without ceasing, in everything give thanks. Do not quench the spirit. Prove all things, verse 21. Abstain from all appearance of evil, and the very God of peace sanctify you wholly. And I pray God, your whole spirit, your soul, and body be preserved blameless unto the coming of our Lord Jesus Christ. You know something? I have no doubt that God will sustain us all the days of our lives here on this earth. And all we have to do to reach and get that sustenance and sustaining is to remember him.